Good evening.
Hi there.
Good evening, all.
Hi, Art.
Hi, hello.
Good to see you.
Thank you. Same here. Yes.
Hi, Don.
Good evening. I actually got this to work. I can't believe it.
Yeah,
I remembered the time. That's a good trick, too.
Yes, that's just great. Well, we're getting better at this.
Yeah. Had enough practice, I guess.
All right.
Hey, Arthur.
Good evening. Hi there, Kathleen. Hi.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hey, Basia. How are you?
Yes, I'm good.
We missed you yesterday at Elizabeth's reading.
Oh.
Yes.
Just about so many people showed up to read. It was really nice.
Great. Beautiful thing to do, to have a poetry reading.
Yeah, it was perfect. And we got to see Jim and his family. So, everybody had wonderful things to say about Elizabeth. There's Dorothy. Great hat.
Thanks.
Yeah, we missed you yesterday too at Elizabeth's reading.
Yes, well, I had a meeting I couldn't skip. It had been scheduled for over a month and I had to be there. I'm sorry. We'll probably have another night for Elizabeth down at the downtown poetry thing down at the convention center later on when things clear up where we can meet in person.
Oh, terrific.
So, yeah, we'll do another one.
I enjoyed that big space.
Yes, it's a wonderful venue.
Yes.
And by the way, we're doing it next Monday night, Valentine's Day. Come, we've got plenty of space to social distance. Bring a love poem, a Valentine poem.
So we're going to do that instead of, next Monday is not the Santa Fe Trail. I can't keep all this stuff straight. What time Monday?
Well, we open at 5:30. Well, I guess the doors open at 5 and then we usually begin reading at 5:30.
Okay, great.
For when everybody gets there. And then we're going to have a featured reader in March. A slam poet that has competed nationally, a spoken word poet.
Wow.
Her name is Lauren Zuniga, and she is great. So keep that in mind.
What a good idea. That'll be interesting.
Yes.
I guess I have to make a list of readers.
Oh, yeah.
Two people entered the waiting room. Oh, here they are. Here's Argos and Michou. And I know what I was going to do with myself.
There's Miss Shu.
She there?
Well, she has a little statue. I don't know if that's Kun Li or Sarah.
Kuan Yin.
But who?
Kuan Yin.
Kuan Yin. Yeah, that's who it is.
What a great name.
That's great.
I always say Kuan Li, and it's Kuan Lin. She's all over Asia.
All right, well, it's 6:30. We have a full screen of people. It looks like something we could do. We could start. Anyone object?
No.
Not at all.
Leave screen and plug in my phone here.
There's Marina.
Hi, everybody.
Hi, Gail.
Hi, Gail.
Where are you, Gail? There's Gail.
Here I am.
I'm busy letting people in. This is amazing. So I'm not paying much attention to my hosting job. But I think we're going to start. Welcome, everybody. I guess we'll just proceed. We have a lot of people. What we've been doing is to read a poem. Oh, you could go up to 3 minutes if you wanted, but we want everybody to have a chance to read. And then we start over again with people who want to come in for a second time.
Oh.
Sometimes we've gone around three times. If we don't have very many people, it's a chance to show off your poetry. So I guess what I'm going to do here is use the list, which is on my right-hand side of the attendance. That way I don't have to write everybody down. And that's going to put Dorothy on first.
Oh. Sounds that's like why I married a man named Alexander. So my name would begin with an O, an A.
That's
my maiden name began with Y. The marriage didn't work, but I went to the head of the line.
That's wonderful.
Okay, my first poem is Learning to Love the World. Yesterday, there was a kind of sunshine favored by old men. The kind of day when my grandfather, crippled by stroke in his 50th year, would sit on the south side of the wooden corn crib, safe from the north wind, a place where the sunlight warmed slowly all through the day like a wood stove. I sat with my grandfather there while he whittled sticks into piles of slivers. We listened to the whisper of the wind, the call of wild geese, the murmuration of farm animals, while he spoke of things I needed to hear. It was on such a day I learned that anyone can slay a dragon, but real courage is waking every morning and daring to love the world all over again.
Amen.
Beautiful. Great.
Very nice.
Good job. Okay. I see that the list on the right is unfair because it has kind of reassembled people in a approximately alphabetical order, not in the order in which you arrived, which is what we usually use. But anyway,
may I ask, Basia, what list are you using?
It comes up on the right-hand column if you go over to the chat.
I just put in chat the list of people who emailed me, but you were already using some lists, so.
Okay, so I'll
I'm
go ahead. Why don't I just read a half a dozen people here and you'll know whether you're going to be coming up.
My question is upstream from that. What list were you working from before I got here?
The machine has given me a list of all the people I allowed to enter.
Oh, those who entered. Okay, that's the list you're talking about. All right, fine.
Just so many people, I don't have time to write down their names.
No. I have a list of people who emailed me to ask to read, but if you're just using who entered, then let's go with that. Right.
Okay, so I'm going to read a few names so you know if something's coming up for you. Gail Laura Dunn is the second reader, and then Marina, Philip Cahoe, Al Bully, I don't know how to pronounce this, Bully, We'll see. And then Art Panero. So right now we're going to hear from Gail Laura Dunn.
Okay, this poem is in, am I muted? No, okay. This poem is in 5 short sections. A day is a year. 1. This day began with sleep. My eyes closed, the lids requiring the room dark. An alarm turned itself on, begging for attention. My eyes opened and the covers rolled back as I lured myself out of the comfort. During the night, a strong winter wind had overturned the trash barrel placed at the curb for weekly pickup. I shivered in my thick bathrobe. Later, I looked outside the window again to see that a kind neighbor had set it upright. Now I could shower without my robe. 2. All day, the sky blinked with winter. I stayed indoors and moved from room to room. In the morning, I napped. I ate cold beans for lunch. In the afternoon, I napped. A book lay open on the dining table to a page I had read over and over for weeks. I could not fathom the words. 3. The need for eggs drove me out of the house. In the grocery store, I walked the aisles searching for anything I could find with hope built into it. 4. On the way home, the rain turned to snow, leaving speckled tracks. Dark against the new white. A woman pushed a grocery cart full of her life along Garcia Street. The cart left tracks upon the tracks. Coda. I stayed home for 3 months. Early spring light peeks through the window blinds. I hear a scratching at the front door, but it stops when I shrink into the darkest corner of the room. Silence puts everything in order. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. Now, I have Kathleen. This is very jumpy. It's not a very good system, but there'll be Kathleen, and after her, Philip Kehoe.
It'll be Kehoe.
Kehoe, okay.
Thank you, Betsy. Pastures. 100 swans of the unconscious, restless eggs, breath, the language of the pond is stout and casual. Tiny wrens, swift in their footwork, owls pen the anguish seen at night. The cadence of the house wheels luminous. The thinking of Merlin and Thoreau are comfortable as clouds. Handsome arms with clean, meticulous hands. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen. What was the name of that poem?
Pastures.
Pastures. all right, Philip Kehoe, would you introduce yourself? And
yeah, new member here, seeing how the group is. And my first offering to you will be what is my very first memory of life. It is called BAM, subtitled 301 and a half Garcia Street, which is where I lived as a child and where the memory springs from. Bam! The screen door slammed. My mother was rushing towards me, silently screaming through the theatrical calm she would wield so well throughout her life. But this was not her life, it was mine. That screen door slam awoke me into this mind, this world. I had followed my brother up and onto the roof of the Crosley, arriving just as he slid down the other side. That is how my mother saw me, alone on top of the car. Bam! The screen door on that adobe cottage under a sheltering copse of trees, solidly placed on a base of golden ground, packed both dusty and hard from all life before, is both an audio and a visual tattoo on my soul. This was the beginning of me remembering. This was the end of my being torn into this life. The only movement in that moment was my mother. Auburn hair and floral print house dress flaring, a flying specter within a still life. We both realized loss in the echo of that sound. Bam! Thank you.
Thank you for that, Philip. On my screen, I have Art Panero next, but let me say a number of you are not muted. And I think it's good to have everybody mute themselves when they're not reading, because the sound quality varies with everybody muted or not. After Art will be Marina.
Am I on now? Art Panero?
You are.
Yes. Okay. Here is a recent piece. The title is The Gorgonzola. The Gorgonzola. We're not talking cheese. We're talking the Gorgon creeping up on Emile Zola. But he escaped her curse, and Perseus took Medusa's head. She is most well known of Gorgon Trinity, Saethno and Uriel, the other two. You recall these mythic shades with horrifying visage and snakes for hair, faded long ago. With power to turn you and me and anyone to stone, dare we to look at them? But wait, the Gorgons haven't gone away. There's US military drone surveiller, the Gorgon Stare. The drone with several eyes that tracks you and me and anyone forthwith, straightway, at once. The sisters live again. Thank you.
Wonderful, thank you. Okay, so I said Marina was next.
Okay.
And after Marina, I have Bully.
Yes.
Okay. Sorry about the pronunciation of your name.
No, that's all right. I'm sorry for its spelling.
Oh, well, we all have our problems. I'm not one to talk. So this is Marina.
Okay, this is from this week. It's called After the War. After the war, you could hear a pin drop, but no one had any pins. After the war, the neighbors packed up and left. After the war, solutions became new problems. After the war, we moved back to the farm, and one by one, the dogs died of old age. After the war, loss was everyone's middle name, and courage was a dirty word. After the war, you could walk for miles without seeing a single horse. After the war, we saw things differently, and no one could say how. After the war, we should have turned to one another, but had lost the plot. After the war, imagination became an end in itself. After the war, we burned all the old photo albums and later sort of regretted it. After the war, some people went about their business as if nothing had happened. After the war, we wondered whether the war had really ended. After the war, we forgot why it had been fought. That's how the next one started. After the war, we are swimming now in Schadenfreude. After the war, many of the sacrifices are volunteers.
To unmute, and thank you, Marina. All right, so this is, I'm so sorry. Bully?
And, your first guess, just bully, you know, like the bad people that pick on others. That's kind of how our family pronounces bully.
Okay, got it. And after after that is going to be Berg, Gregory Berg. Okay, well, welcome. Would you introduce yourself? And you may read.
Certainly. My name is Al Bully. I moved from Michigan about 5 months ago. I'm working at and on the Alameda, and am eventually going to be creating a lot of written works in this town. Here is one that I've created while in a different town. I like to change things up on occasion, so this is actually a movie review that I wrote for a tribal newspaper. I was doing a small little column, movie reviews of Native American themed movies. And this is the legendary Running Brave, starring Robbie Benson as Billy Mills. Running Brave is a classic 1983 movie about Billy Mills, an Oglala Lakota Sioux boy who loves running. He loved it so much that he even knew when to give it up and when to accept it into his life again. Though Billy's dream of running in the Olympic Games seemed impossible at times, he accepted his destiny when it was time to do so. Born in 1938 on the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota, Billy looked up to his father as a great man who gave his all. This was exemplified in the movie during a scene in which Billy's dad was in a prize fight with a large man dressed like a Viking. Though it looked like he was getting beat up and going to lose, his father told him to bet on him when the odds reached 5-1. They did during the next round, and just as planned, Billy's dad knocked out the larger man. When Billy was refused payment, his father stepped up and demanded the boy be paid. Unfortunately, when Billy was 13, his father passed on, but his teachings lived on in his son. Although a great runner at the Haskell Institute, where he went to high school, the track coach at Kansas University was hesitant to give Billy an athletic scholarship due to his Indian heritage. At first, college was unkind to him, and he experienced bigotry from the public and teammates alike. like his father, Billy was strong and firm in who he was and even asserted himself physically a couple times. Eventually, Billy met a girl and they started dating. Pat experienced pressure from her parents about Billy's heritage, but she didn't let it sway how she felt for him. They were a real good couple, and Pat supported him at his races. Coach Easton had said a few times to Billy that he had coached other great Indian runners, but they always quit for one reason or another. Billy proves him wrong for a long time, in spite of his coach's insistence on running races a way that Billy didn't feel comfortable with. Sadly, the pressure to live up to the expectations on him, both in running and as a future business professional, catches up to Billy just before his time at Kansas is done, troubled by a visit from his relatives in which he was harassed over his current lifestyle. Billy starts losing races. Pushed to the edge by his coach, he finally quits running for Kansas University. Though he does complete his degree, Billy returns to the reservation. It is home to him, and he regains his love for running there. When Billy's uncle Frank dies from alcohol poisoning, he starts to realize just how important his running was to everyone on the reservation. Frank said to Billy just a few days earlier that he still had a chance to go somewhere and do something with himself. People had been asking Billy if he was going to the Olympics, and it finally sinks in that he has to begin pursuing his dream again. Becoming a Marine and training for the 1964 Olympics in Tokyo, Japan, Billy heals his wounds and qualifies for the 10,000 meter race. There are a few things in the movie which I've left out, and what happens in the Olympics is best appreciated by watching the movie. Though it might be obvious that Billy wins the race, seeing the drama unfold is very enjoyable. This is a steady-paced movie with a lot of kick at the end, just like the way Billy Mills ran. In closing, it should be noted that the only American to ever win the 10,000 meters at the Olympics was a Native American runner who chased down and caught his dream. Thank you.
I should be open here. Okay, I guess I should, it occurred to me I hadn't mentioned this again, but we're going to try to keep these first, this first round to 3 minute maximum. The next readers, I'm going to give you the names of three people, will be, what's your name? Genevieve Betts. Okay, and then Aaron Rudolph. And then Alex Burns. Okay, let's start with Berg. Gregory Berg.
Hi, I'm Greg. It's great to be with you again.
Oh, there you are.
This is Facing Rothko's Fields. Most of you probably know Mark Rothko was an abstract expressionist painter known best for his color field paintings. Facing Rothko's Fields. I have a conversation with Untitled 1970, knowing that Rothko fell inches from panels of Lithol Red, razor replacing brush, marking his world, each stroke closer to the end. Cage's 6 minutes of silence as I face those color fields. Salts in blood and azo dye, artist tape, bandaging paint. My spirit drifts against planes of color, attaching as mist, amplified in fuzzy squares, enveloped, unsealed, vascular. I'm imagining if I could pull pins from canvas and frame, unstretch and wrap around my shoulders, head bowed into a stiff shawl, chips of dried egg and glue drifting below.
Mark Rothko is the one of the greatest. Thank you.
Okay, Aaron Rudolph will be next. Please mute yourself if you're not reading. And after Aaron, we'll have Alex Burns.
Aaron. Basia? Basia, yes. You forgot Genevieve Betts.
Ah.
You had given her name first.
Well, okay, Aaron, you have to back up.
Yeah.
Bring in Genevieve.
Sure.
Welcome, Genevieve. Please introduce yourself.
Hi, I'm Genevieve. I used to attend this open mic when we would meet in person at Teatro Paraguas, but it's been a while since I did any Zoom anything.
Oh, good. Well, welcome back.
Thank you. This one begins with a short epigraph. Beekeeper. I will make you keeper of my bees. Henry Van Dyke. In Big Sur, my youngest tells me he can speak the language of bees. A stick-legged bird calls out, holy, 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 and I have to agree. We pilgrimage from Big Sur River to the sea. Opium-heavy poppies nod their blossoms, and forest bells chitter at lizards. The last time I stood in this river, my youngest was a seahorse swimming in my belly's saline, the sweetest fetus. There are flowers in my hair, San Francisco, the daisies of Golden Gate Park. Give me your bridges and albino crocodile. Give me your weeds and your island-bound prison, your bartenders with Vonnegut tattoos. The bees have said nothing to me all day, and I'm starting to doubt the power of language. Child, if I can't understand them, then you must be the translator of their buzz abundant kingdom. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Genevieve. And now, Aaron Rudolph.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Some of you I know, some of your friends of mine. I'm originally from Las Vegas, New Mexico. Currently, I'm living in Denver. And this poem. It's called, I Married the Snow. Despite my beloved's objection, I married myself to the snowy morning. I confirmed the relationship by stretching into a series of snow angels, crisp, curved lines, before standing and flinging snowballs toward the sky as a wet and wobbly offering. I sang songs I made up with the words snow and freezing and shivering and wet and fun. And love. I made a pilgrimage to my grandmother's home, vacant for 18 years in the snow-filled mountains of New Mexico. I just stood there and let the weather embrace me like a blanket, a hug, a freezing pail of water that wakes you to the outside, drowns the dream you've conjured. We've let the snow carry us to a place that we've craved, and now returning to the world seems like a burn that won't easily heal. Thank you.
Okay, now after Aaron comes Alex Burns, and then Argos McCallum, Don McKellar, and then me. So we'll start with Alex.
Thanks, Basia. This poem I wrote earlier this year. On the threshold of the year, spidery in their nudity, the trees etch the gray sky, snow promised but absent, as clouds erase mountain vistas. So begins the year, a study in obscurity, brimming with promise and fraught with peril. Will snow carpet the mountains, filling reservoirs and aquifers, bring blossoms in spring or tendrils of flame? Disease rages like an inferno. Does it kill us or the pandemic? A future of hope and recovery or legions of the dead? a Russian as mad as Rasputin, poised to stomp on his neighbors. Does he step back in peace or free the dogs of war? Another coming election, a shining example of a free people choosing who will govern, or a black cloud of violence. We wait and we pray and we hope our gods are listening and they favor peace and healing while we cast a wary eye.
Okay, thank you, Alex.
Thanks.
Next
comes... Good to see you, Aaron. Good to see you.
You too, Dorothy. Yeah, I've been wanting to say hi all night.
Next comes... McCallum. There you are. And then... No, Argos. And then... Dawn, and then me.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. This one's called New Story. That's very recent. There's no snow in this one. Dead giraffes in the Kenyan bush dissolve like rancid butter in the heat of the unending drought. Emaciated cattle lie down in the desert sand. Serrated ribs sink into the rivulets of erosion carved long ago by extinct rain. The village digs deep in the earth to find the trembling brown water lifted to the light, bucket by bucket. The four-year-old girl, too weak to raise her head, eyes like dead fish. A childhood without a childhood, where laughter never rains, only dust so eager to devour, and way to the north, an oozing caramel of cars scarifies the land in toxic opulence, and a child's balloon is caught on power lines in dark descending twilight. Thank you.
Okay. That's good. Next we have Don.
Good evening. I got a couple of short ones. I tend to write in a landscape format, put a column on each side of the page, you know, just short stuff. You fold it up and that's a folio the way it would appear in print. They never do. This is another old saw resharpened to cut deeper. The quandary of orthodox antagonism. Allow me to ask you a question that may seem a little odd. Did God create man, or did man create God? I tend to favor the latter proposition, although I've rarely placed much faith in any religious vision, but it is my belief that the gold in my teeth is the product of a neutron star collision. Have faith in your beliefs, but question them continuously and revise them accordingly. Beliefs are based on faith to provide hope. Some beliefs may be questioned for their validity. Others may not. If you think you can fly, jump out the window, have faith in your belief and hope for the best. If that makes you feel better on your way down. I myself am an orthodox antagonist with religious, political, and philosophical viewpoints 180 degrees in opposition to yours, regardless of what you may believe, because I'm an orthodox antagonist with beliefs directly opposed to yours. And if you don't believe that, see what I mean? Okay, this is written back on the 19th of November, 2021, about an eclipse of the full beaver moon. It began just after midnight on mountain time here in Santa Fe. And by 0203, the belt of Orion pointed directly at a moon shrouded in an earth shadow, shaded as red as the blush on the surface of a peach, with the dim glow of the Andromeda Galaxy just off to the upper right and very much farther away from my point of view.
Okay, thank you so much. Well, like Argos, this is about the weather, about weather we're not experiencing right now. I wrote it this morning at 8 o'clock. It's called among the forms of weather. Among the forms of weather, it's spring rain that makes me think of dying. It must be from the isolation of single drops. Outside my kitchen window, each drop takes a moment alone and vulnerable to roll slowly down behind the flower pots. With my aging neighbor, it's a spine that curves despite military training. Shoulders droop, blue work shirts askew. His walk has slowed since fall. He raises an arm with effort to salute a friend who's meeting him. They're of the same weather. Sun comes as a robe, at times a blaze. Snow's a wrap, an envelope, its work at depth modest and unseen. Wind skirts corners or condemns what's been built or grown tall. All inscrutable, not of our size, but soft rain, the gradual meeting of drops and gathering in pools. Yes, that, the gathering, then sinking before our eyes. Its transition at our measure, reminder of our origin, place of return. Thank you. Now we've got a couple more people. Thank you. A couple more people. I have Hiram LaRue and Henricks. Did you want to read?
Thank you. This is my first time. I'll just listen, but thank you.
Well, if you have a poem, you're welcome to come after Hiram.
Okay.
Okay. So welcome, Hiram. You can introduce yourself.
Sure. Thank you, Bezia. Yeah, I'm Hiram LaRue. I'm from Maryland, outside of Washington, D.C. Just a little bit of background on this poem. Charles Arthur Floyd, who lived from 1904 to 1934, was also named Pretty Boy Floyd, and he was an American bank robber. He operated on the West Coast and in the Central States, and his criminal exploits gained widespread press coverage. He was very well known in the 1930s. This poem first appeared in Poetry South. It's titled Pretty Boy Floyd. Erase everything that you know about him, his place of birth, or middle name, or even how he died in a spray of bullets. Ignore all of that. It makes no difference. He hardly made a difference, except, my goodness, his name. No matter what you think about him, there's his nickname. Somehow it brings to mind farmers, especially beet or wheat farmers in bowls of dust. Farmers that shook their heads at that name or wiped their noses and grinned. A name so outside the Midwest and yet so from in it. A blue ribbon jar of pickles or glinting chrome. Floyd, meaning an uncle or post office clerk, but also pretty boy, meaning a curl of cigarette smoke or the brass clats of suspenders or even a French postcard. Nothing that went wrong with him counts much now. But just like Bonnie Prince Charles, We want to see his picture anyway. And when we finally do, framed in a very different world, we whisper, good gracious, to ourselves. Thank you, Basia.
Thank you, Hiram. Good introduction. We've had so much history tonight, so many references to the real world. It's wonderful. Mr. Henricks, are you interested in reading?
Maybe next time.
Maybe next time. Okay, good enough. Good enough. Is there anyone who hasn't read who wants to read?
I didn't. Somehow my name got passed.
Well, then let's put you in.
All right.
It's easy. It's easy to miss someone. My apologies. Yeah. You can read, and then we'll think about starting another round.
Very good. Okay, thanks. This time of year is my least productive poetry wise. This body doesn't like the cold and doesn't have a lot left to, after just keeping the furnace lit in this body. This is a poem that I think emerged just after the last open mic. So I don't think I've read this one. We came wearing our good boots to walk snow-softened trails. Oops, I'm mentioning snow. It seems to be a trend. Okay, we came wearing our good boots to walk snow-softened trails, to ride the painted hills of El Dorado on a breeze that had matured to wind, outgrown the measures of mere mortal meteorologists, with a cold bite like a mother to her colt. It benevolently scoured the worries from our fields and from our words. As clouds of conversation rose from the chimneys of our hearts, carrying toward oblivion the compulsory considerations of casualties, remedies, contradictions, ivermectin. Tough love gusts carrying away cares and carrying us over eroding stone, cajoling the trees to teach us of a breath enduring and resilient and available always simply in forgetting. Forgetting the story, forgetting the self, forgiving and floating. Stop swimming upstream in the river of lies. Go to ground. Give it over. Let it all go. And watch a school of gratitude fish swoop up from beneath to buoy you beachward, where you clamber onto shore and slog another mile in the deep hummus of humanness, before falling back again into the waves of remembrance. Remembrance reached only in forgetting. Thank you.
Thank you, Mishu. Anyone else? I missed the first time. All right. Are there people who would like to go ahead? It's 7:15. Okay, I see a number of people. How about if I just start at the top? I apologize for this crazy list. It's the list on the right-hand side that I thought I was going to be able to count on keeps shifting so that, in fact, people who had already read were coming up next. So I had to scribble down a list. So it's all been horrendous. Dorothy. You're the Alexander. Would you like to read?
There. Yes, I would. First, I would like to say to Hiram that Pretty Boy Floyd served a prison term in Oklahoma. And the state prison had a prison farm where they raised all the food. They even raised some cotton, and the inmates did all the work. It was a half mile down the road from my uncle's farm, and my cousin Ross had a squirrel, a little squirrel he had found in a nest by itself when it was a little baby, and he kept the squirrel and made a pet out of it. And he was walking by the prison farm one day, and Pretty Boy Floyd saw him and asked him if he would sell the squirrel, because he was very lonesome in his cell at night. And so my cousin Ross gave him the squirrel, and he took it home with him and took it back to his cell and kept it.
Who knows? Well, another poem, Dorothy.
Yes, yes. Anyway, here's my poem. It's called First Love, and it's for my first boyfriend who was a Cherokee boy, but he died in Korea in 1952. A green breeze blows from the south, mellow and sensuous. The consistency of melting ice cream, smoothing out wrinkles, as we lie outside on a hard cotton mattress, still warm from the sun. Giant stars float in their deep black blue bowl. Melancholy that comes at the end of day holds us in perfect tension. I am convinced we have invented a new emotion, the first to know that burning thing between us. I want to remember that night until the day I die.
Thank you, Dorothy. I'm just going to go down the list and call everybody. And if you want to read, well, you'll tell me then. Gail?
Yes.
And Katherine, you'll be next if you want to read again.
Shipwreck. You think entering the sea is terrifying, is the end, that the arms of a giant octopus will pull you down beyond what you know. But once you are wet, warmth creeps through you. Your body will feel new. An amazing strength will emerge. Gasping, you will walk deeper into troubled water, where a new passage will open through the coral reefs. Follow this and let it remove the dark you thought hid you. Let the debris of the ship float on the waves. Let those who arrive in small boats make a home for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. Katherine?
Thank you, Basia. Mosaics of blue iris. Sunlight around the trust of harmonics. A party of believable comfort zones. Even my foot avoids the chance to excel. The rowdy impact of eternal Latin. Wrestling with the wrong lie. Trying the lousy, gorgeous other one. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Katherine. Philip Kehoe. You'll have to unmute.
Thank you. I will read. This one's an ode piece for Charles Bukowski. The title is Payout 920. When he wasn't at home drinking and writing poetry, he was drinking and betting on horses, quite often at Santa Anita Park. So, hence the title. Whatever happened to Bukowski's BMW? It should be bronze, and installed in the infield in Santa Anita Park. If not within the sacred oval, then perhaps parked crookedly somewhere in the lot. Hell, put a bronze Hank in it with a warm beer to his lips and a speeding ticket on the empty seat beside him. I wonder if he was smart enough to bet on Tuesday Testa, the day that she rode Buzz On at 4-1 odds right into the history books. He sure would have noticed her, the only woman jockey on the track. She was a knockout. Among other bronzes and the topiary, Zenyatta and John Henry race around the Kingsbury Fountain, and Seabiscuit oversees the paddock, yet there's no nod to the common poet at his favorite pastime. What was his win-loss record, and to how many other tracks did he run? What would he have thought about this poem? Probably not much. He just wanted to be left alone with his racing form, his drink, and his earplugs, the red ones that shut the rest of us out. Thank you.
Thank you, Philip. That's great. The next names are Art Panero. Will you read? It looks like you're going to read. And then Marina will... After that, and then, what's your name, Al Woolley? Okay, Art?
Yeah, here I go. Here's a page poem, a short one. Anyway, here it is. It's called Stone Age Brains in 21st Century Skulls. The foot, especially the toes, comical, funny things, if you ponder them. So unlike our noble hand, painted, sculpted dramatically in Renaissance times, look at Caravaggio's Christ pointing at St. Matthew. Once upon a time, our days as primal naked apes, prehensile paw and tail and feet. Once upon a time, our prehensile supple parts adapted for arboreal locomotion with features for bipedal walking yet to come. Now toes atrophied and gnarled, maybe cursed with toenail fungus, leftovers of the evolutionary trend. At last, a human foot with spring-like arch for bipedal walking running. Our life in trees now gone, it's been downhill since we climbed down to stalk upright on earth, to stalk upright the earth, yet primal naked apes with Stone Age brains. Thank you.
Thank you. Marina, would you like to read? Is Marina here? I guess Marina isn't here. Al Bulley.
I took a little extra the first time around, and I'm thankful for being able to read that piece. I would like to hear more of everyone else's.
I hope I didn't offend you.
Oh, not at all. And believe you me, I knew I deserved to hear that. That's all right.
Oh dear. Well, maybe on the third round. Now we have Berg. There you are, Gregory Berg.
This is prescribed burn at Aztec Springs. Not a watering can, a drip torch. Same metal shape with balance in hand, 50-50 gas and diesel. Slight tilt, fuel to wick, steady drizzling fire. Benzene soaking, leaf litter, roots, fungi, optimum conditions for the mosaic burn pattern. Generations of nest now kindling, little roasted voles, red sizzling berries, smoke in the eyes of a lumbering dove. Homes of bark and stem, burrows of duff turn to ash. 13 million square feet at Aztec Springs, 6 hours without refueling. If the world were turned upside down, rabbits would be falling into fire.
Okay, Greg, did you say smoke in the eyes of lumbering doves?
Yes.
That's quite a line. All right, next is Genevieve. Is Genevieve still here, and would you like to read?
Sure, I have one more.
Okay.
My middle-aged body. I love my middle-aged body because it is finally all mine. Not my childhood body under the control and style of adults. Mom created hairdos yanked too tight against my scalp. Or my teenage body, verboten of a loss of virginity, as if something of value, like an antique ruby-dotted ring, would be stolen, sold in some pawn shop, seedy and tucked into a roadside plaza. Not my adult woman body, creating and feeding other humans like any mammal does, an animal decade of colic and milk tooth. Since then, I have measured out my life with birth control pills, menstrual cycles, the graying of hair against each temple, a funny word to describe the rounded corners of my brain case. And if the body is a temple, let mine house the sacredness of my mind, its gardens and toads, imaginary, real, or otherwise, and all that I've planted there, heirloom and vibrant. Thank you.
Thank you, Genevieve. Now we have Aaron Rudolph, if you would like to read again. Yes?
Yes, thank you.
Okay. And after that, I'll call on Alex Burns Argos after that. Aaron?
Okay. This one is called There Are Things on This Planet. There are things on this planet that I'll never know. The hurricane that is heroin and other exterminations. I'll never eat turkey on the beach surrounded by waves and the brightest and most curved seashells rounded to quarter circles like the bottom of a boat. The dirt under me will one day shift, maybe replaced by synthetic surfaces laid across the earth like candy wrappers, soft and crinkly with each step. There will be no sugar, though, and I'll wander my corner of this world, searching for sweetness, looking under bushes, inside of homes, and even at the bottom of caverns, foraging for the slightest kernel of light that can keep all of this visible. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Aaron. Next comes Alex Burns. Argos Dawn coming up. Would you like to read, Alex?
I would. Another seasonal poem. Just happened to pick out two of those. I guess that's what's been inspiring me of late. An Albuquerque Christmas. At last, it's Christmas Eve. A crisp white moon springs up behind the notch, casting shadows on darkened clouds. Below in the valley, lights twinkle like a forest of festive pines, glittering in their glory. All around, farolitos gleam, lining the roofs, adorning the walls, lighting our paths. The scent of pinon lies heavy on the air as flames flicker gaily in their hearths. The tinkling laughter of children in holiday jammies, brimming with anticipation and shaking parcels beneath the tree. Then all is quiet, children abed, as adults creep quietly and stockings are filled and rehung. Cookies and carrots intended for mythical beings are consumed to lend credence to the Christmas fantasy, celebrating the birth of a pauper of uncertain parentage and a bright star, oh, those many years before. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Good. Argos, would you like to read?
Yeah, I do apologize. This one isn't much happier than the last one, but this is called Idlib. Idlib is, of course, the province in Syria, northern Syria, where with the refugee camps, with the civil war still going on for a decade. Idlib. In Idlib province, the onslaught of snow covers failed tents in the night with no moon, only silence. In a camp of last resort in a country of shredded hope. The tent poles bend and break. Sodden canvas sinks to the ground. The breath of a baby is snuffed in a sarcophagus of snow. In a camp of last resort in a country of shredded hope. The flowers of the field fled long ago, childish laughter forever smothered, drowned in the motionless waves of devastating white. The falling snow mutes the sobbing, but the grief is just beginning in a camp of last resort in a country of shredded hope. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, after Argos, Don, would you like to read another?
Yeah, sure. I met a Syrian refugee a few years ago, brilliant guy, Orthodox Jew of all things too, which you don't expect out of Syria. I think he was translating Arabic for the CIA or something, but he was waiting for a ride from a Catholic church so they could get, you know, a kosher butcher to provide them with some meals. Yeah. I'm never sure what I've read, so I'm going to read something by someone else. You guys all set the bar pretty high, and that was true back in Virginia too. My friend Serena Fusek wrote a book called Ancient Maps in a Tarot Pack, and I got playing with some tarot cards yesterday, so I'm going to read one of her pieces called She is the Daughter of Sailors, of Heretics, of Black Marketeers, People on the Run, People on the Lam, People who Call the Journey Home. In her luggage, ancient maps in a tarot pack. From the pillion of an iron pony, she watches the landscape slide by. Her eyes gleam like a falcon's. The road beneath her battered boots meanders and twists, but her heart is the crow that flies the miles straight. Her heart is the crystal that cracks in the moon's eclipse. Her heart is a cavern through which the winds cry. Her heart is not yours. Across a table covered in midnight, veiled in starlight, she shuffles her cards, lays out the pattern of the roads. She traveled all over North America on the back of a boyfriend's BMW years ago. So we were kindred spirits as motorcycle enthusiasts. And I really like her work.
That's great. That's great. I have a book coming out in a couple of months called Walking into Daylight. And this poem is in there. There's a section of poems regarding women in my life who have helped organize me and enrich my life. This one is in honor of Malala Yousafzai. It's called Prism of Light. Wherever it's found, light throws open windows, unlatches gates, loosens links that bind our bodies and tie us to the ground. Light breaks through silence, Malala, as you speak to the leaders of readings for girls, of lessons shining. Light converted the crack of black bullets, Malala, fired point blank at your temple when you rode unarmed in a school bus in SWAT. Bright images of you bandaged in Birmingham flashed on screens and burst on the world like a prism. The sight of your courage inspires us, Malala. We stand tall because of many like you, light-bearing girl. Thank you. We are now down to Hiram, and then maybe Al Bulley would like to read something.
Thank you, Basia. Light-bearing girl, wonderful last line. It's a week early, but I don't care. I'm going to read a love poem. This one first appeared in Wisconsin River Valley Journal. It's a little bit older poem. It's titled Boat. You see, I don't care if his hair is combed bad. He is my son. I love every shoestring of him, every bit that he thinks he knows. 15 years. I don't care what he becomes because he'll become something. Look at him. He'll become more than those red ears or grinning legs. He'll become even more important than midnight. More and more, I hold him by his shoulder, less and less. And when I do, it's as if he can't be here forever. I think I'll get him a boat to carry and then watch him like the minute that just went by. In the long run, nothing I do will matter. I know that. But look at him, especially when he's reaching for something. There must be a whole other world out there somewhere that's missing him. Thanks, Basia.
Good, very nice, thank you. So after Bulley, I will ask Michu if she wants to read, and then we'll see whether we want to read any more after all of that. What about it, Al Bulley? You're muted. Can't hear you.
Well, then, one of the things I thought of reading, I think I could do it quickly, but there is a picture that accompanies this, and I don't have a way to. Do I have a way?
I have a little green square at the bottom of my screen that says share screen.
Yes, and it says host disabled participant screen sharing.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Maybe. I don't have that note, but let me click this green.
What I'm trying to do now is...
I don't know where that...
Okay, that is not. I was looking at possibly trying to send this file through chat, and it looks like that is possible. My apologies, one brief moment, and we will be okay. Oh, I sent that to just one person. Here it is. Okay. I'm willing to give this a shot. And if you all have checked your chat, there is something called Harris Beach Photo. For reference, that is on the southern Oregon coast. So that is the Pacific. All right, I don't know if I can pull this off. Let's give it a shot. Sunset at dawn. There's a jade right there, Dad. Our first one this morning. Yeah, hurry, a wave's coming in. Got it. Hold your pose, honey. This will be good for Sarah to see. Last night on the phone, she said she misses our dawn jade hunts and wished she could go today. I'm glad she's coming home on break in a week.
Ooh.
Holy cow, what the? Brenda, Russ, don't look at that. What happened out there? Oh my God, it's in the picture. The flash never went off. Mom, Dad, what's going on? I think that asteroid just hit offshore about 300 miles away. Gang, we might be done right here in a few minutes. For real? As in done living? Come on. Kevin, you are joking. You're joking, right? Brenda, woman of my dreams, who I've been so lucky and happy to know, to love. Unfortunately, I'm serious. Calm, but yes, serious. So we're gonna die right here, today, now? I always thought the Cascadia quake wouldn't happen while I was alive, but a giant tsunami still did. Wild. Kevin, you're scaring me, are you? Kevin, I love you eternally. Thank you so much for so many wonderful years with two fabulous children. Russell, oh my, come here. Mom, I don't want to die. Can't we get away, Dad? That wasn't a small explosion we heard. Guess the reports this asteroid passed by Earth were wrong. If they were telling the truth about its size, an ocean impact would produce an explosion 1,000 times more powerful than Hiroshima and Nagasaki combined. Did they really lie to us about the asteroid just passing by? Everyone lied? No, a handful of scientists said they thought impact was possible. Russell, wish I could say our public officials always told the truth. Something like this, if they knew it was a guaranteed impact, I guess we won't ever know. Well, dang, if we're gonna die, I love you guys so much. You're the best parents ever. Hey, look at the water. Dad, is that what I think it is? Yes, it is. Come here, you two. You know I'm going to remember this moment for the rest of my life. Oh, Dad, you have to be so corny right now. Washington, D.C. God, I'm so tired. Oh, a post by my mom. Must be a jade hunt. Your family gets up early to look for rocks? Weird. Whoa, something's not right. Oh, my God, we got to check Twitter. For what? Oh no, that asteroid hit the Pacific just off the southwest Oregon coast. Oh no.
Amazing. And that's quite a photo.
Yeah, yeah. It's a beautiful sunset in reality.
It's pretty dramatic.
But then sometimes reality just isn't as fun.
Well, you made the most of it, shall we say.
Thank you.
Okay, Mishu, would you like to read again? Okay. You have to unmute yourself.
I had to excavate the Zoom window. I was looking at some alternate poems here. Yeah, I decided I would read something from the poetry book that I published in September rather than something that insisted itself upon me while I was trying to meditate earlier this week. So I think that I'm going to read something called the Dukkha Flower. And for those of you who don't know, Dukkha is a word used in the Eastern religions to describe the phenomenon of unsatisfactoriness that afflicts human beings. So it's sometimes they interchange it with the word suffering, but it's really, I think, the closest translation you can get is unsatisfactoriness. This was originally written, I think, in February of 2020. The Dukkha flower, so beguiling, so versatile, comes in every color, but blinds you to the soil. So wily, so medicinal, shows you leave from dolor, then traps you in its coil. And then for the rest of this poem, the meter changes. Its roots reach deep into your mind, preventing its erosion long before you come to find you'll regret the intrusion. Genus Dukkha Mahamai, an invasive species, named for how its pollen overlays the world in feces. Only place it doesn't grow is deep below the surface, in the cave of heart where flows the milk of all life's purpose. And grows the rose whose fragrant tendrils can enfold its roots, alchemize, absolve, distill, and yield love's healing fruit. Frees the soul, redeems the world, draws back the prismic veil, and prisoner, guard, and gardener, as one, walk free from jail.
Nice, very good. I don't seem to have any controls. Well, I guess I just have to leave it at that. What do you think? Are there other people who would like to read? We have 15 minutes till 8. Don't know if you want to continue.
There's one poem I'd like to read because I found another motorcyclist on the group. So I was inspired to read that one, if I may.
Sure, let's do that. And then we'll see how we're doing afterward. I've lost my controls here. Go ahead, Alex. Okay. Read.
All right. This one's called Tiger. She gleams in the harsh glare of summer noon, resting, muscular, at once relaxed and barely contained, waiting impatiently for that which will complete her, awaken her fury. A dark figure clambers over her flanks. She roars into life and bounds away. Her rider, entranced, controls her every move, but barely, her power so great, holding to a canter, yearning for the highway. A mighty beast leaping through twists and turns, the mountain rising fast beneath her, clawing her way through hairpins, gliding through sweepers, floating along, barely touching, caressing rider and highway. She is Tiger, queen of open vistas, faithful servant, and demanding mistress.
Mm-hmm. Great, that's good. Anyone else want to read?
Sure, I'll go in with a short one. This is Art, Arthur Panaro.
Okay, Art, and then Philip.
It's a quick one. We are the lotus eaters. We are the lotus eaters. Why should life all work and labor be? We are not the root and crown of nature. Leave us alone, let us drowse, let us slouch and loll and bend the way we want. All tension gone, half awake, half senseless, numb. Bring us that magic flower that floats on portentous water, that magic flower aglow, effulgent, blessed by Apollo's light. You say you travel on the sea, poor fellows. You have my sympathy. Rest here a while. Take, taste, eat this glorious blossom, a triumphant irony against the oozy silts that are its sustenance. Jason and you Argonauts, you've worked so hard on shipboard and rolling sea. You can take a break. So why should life all work and labor be? We are not the root and crown of nature. Thank you.
Thank you, Art. I wrote down the oozy silts that are its sustenance. That's great. That's just great. Now, Philip.
Thank you. Am I unmuted? It looks
you
like.
You are unmuted. I don't seem to have any control over anything anymore.
Okay. Well, this craft we've chosen is not an easy one. It has its perils, it has its difficulties, but we write, we continue to write. And hopefully we get to share with people like this group. So this one is called For Those Who Would Write. Poetry comes to us well before our birth, music of our mother's voice, rhythm of the earth, are the spirit chords nourishing our worth. Muted lines of oft-repeated rhymes illustrate our dreams. Wouldn't it be superb if everything we heard before descending into this earth were always soothing meditations, sweet cooing murmurs, smooth invocations, invitations luring us towards mirth? Too often that is not the case, as gentle arts become displaced with bullets, bombs, and beatings, bringing to many babies ghastly and concussive waves, distorting and deforming their little fluid world, forging it unholy, propelling not to surety, but headlong towards dismay. Some poems are stillborn in idyllic scenes, from behind high stucco walls to those of sheltered means who have never witnessed, or so to me it seems, life's most cruel and callous things, like war and rape and rampant greed, all that is obscene. Poetry is more than violets and roses or the mist of jungle waterfalls. Some of it is writ in Icarus ink or carved in bathroom stalls. It's doused in whiskey, burned into prison walls, not meant for some coffee house self-absorbed applause, but rising spirits in juke joints and pulses in beer halls. One poem is a dun horse running with a roan halfway up a mesa, burnished by December's sun. Another poem may tell a different tale about a flea chewing on a sewer rat standing on some lately fallen stone. Perhaps a child is left alive to cry in that bombed and busted home. Stanza, rhyme, and forms how we are taught to write, as if any form follows the living of a life. I both accept it and reject it, to ferret for my own a more disparate tone. Years of haunting tell you to edit yet again, massage the thing until it reads just right, or just write it as it comes, and when it comes, hope it comes in tight. Immersion in your process brings you style, validates your stand, but take heed, my friend, for it may be no more lasting than boot tracks in the sand. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to read? Misha would like to read. I have a poem, and then maybe we'll be done. Misha.
While I was looking for poems, I found this one too. And for some reason, it tickles me to read these metrically challenging ones or metrically challenged ones. Anyway, there's metric mischief in this one as well. This is called Convergence, and it was inspired on the winter solstice of 2020 by that great conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn that happened in the sky there. So it's kind of a dense metrically. Convergence. There is no name for the color of trees and the blast of this buttergun sun. perched this auspicious solstice eve on the blade of the horizon, and bowing beneath, yielding the stage to the novelty act of twin suns, binary rivals merging once in an age, in a rare slow dance, like parents estranged at a prodigal child's graduation. All is forgiven, always has been. The world is reborn just now. How might the hangover from this occasion transform your every tomorrow? The morrow is already under your skin, in your tremulous dreams and your marrow. Look up into the Cheshire Cat grin of a moon that can see past your sorrow. Stick your mischievous tongue out at him, and your grin gilds your heart's chiaroscuro. The streamers arrayed on the sky tonight, no denying now they are for you. Your number is coming. What will you sing? Lullaby, anthem, hillbilly swing? Words, key, and style matter less than feeling. How in this moment you are undone could bring a new world into being.
Thank you. Thank you. I see what you mean. So I've got a poem. If I can lay my hands on it. Okay. It rhymes too. I wrote it on Tuesday morning last week, or Wednesday morning, when we'd had the snow, and it was huge and it was very, very cold. So this is called An Apparition, Mentors, My Meal. I fetched the paper to the snow pile's crunch, the cold at 0 shivery degrees. The thermometer suggests I sleep till lunch, but I breakfast on a heap of nuts I seize. I then down a bowl of steel-cut oats, swirled molasses, blackstrap makes it sweet, and slice a thick 9-seed grain piece of toast, and top each half with a perfect wedge of brie. What appetite! I stand in awe to see my instinct kicking in, a kind of ghost awakening from ancient times in me. It thinks with cold a famine's due. Now, feast. That's all. Thank you. All right, well, it's been lovely, and thank you for staying, and thank you for contributing. We've had such a range of terrific stuff. What a nice evening. Thank you all. See you next month.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you all.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you very much, all.
Yeah, thanks to the kitty.
Look forward to hearing you read, Steve.
You will. You will.
Beautiful.
Come again, Al.
I shall. Thank you.